here. After we play the next 2 weeks, walk out this area, taking everything with us.
Up, if you are able, our flag salute will be led by Representative Stigler.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by the Mount Hood Brass Quintet in the Portland Clackamas County area. Guests of Representative Tomei.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wonderful. Courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, please help me to welcome the Johnson Creek Brass today. The Johnson Creek Brass has performed two pieces that you may have recognized this morning. That's a Plenty and Ain't Misbehavin'. And I'm told that those pieces were chosen for their musical qualities, not for a statement about the state budget or our conduct. This group is very dear to my heart. Gary Michael, who is an artist and a retired architect, plays trumpet, and he's founder of the Johnson Creek Brass. Please wave, Gary. He also happens to be my husband. Carrie Basinger, wave, Carrie. She's on French horn. She's also from Milwaukee. She's a controller for a manufacturing company. Her two children are here today following mom at work. Their names are Nadia and Noah. Wave, please. Dennis Crabtree also is playing the trumpet. Wave, Dennis. He's from Tigard. He's been a baker for 17 years. Now he's an internet technology support person and an avid bicyclist. Chuck Ford on trombone. Wave, Chuck. He's from Malala, and he's an electrical contractor purchasing agent. His wife, Pat, is also here. Wave, Pat. Thanks for coming. And we also have Steve Jackham. He's from Portland, and he plays the tuba, and he's an electrical engineer. Thank you all for being here today, and I want to announce this group will also play a concert of jazz and classical music in the Rotunda at noon. Please drop by and listen to the fine music. Thanks for coming today.
And with a professional agent like Representative Tomei, I'm sure you'll continue to succeed very well. Further courtesies, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to welcome some families here today who represent families from all over Oregon who have young children who experience disabilities. They're part of the Early Intervention, Early Childhood Special Education Program that provides services to children in your district. You folks are all standing up. Fantastic. They'll be delivering stories from families all over the state. There's also a very moving photo exhibit on the front steps of the Capitol on early intervention and early childhood special education. They'll be up at 1 o'clock, and we are working hard to try to make sure we strengthen these programs for our kids and for our families throughout the state. It's fantastic to be able to welcome you to your House of Representatives. Thanks for being here. Colleagues, thanks for extending your courtesies. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome. Great to have you all here. Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have three honorary pages today, and I'm going to ask you to stand up. They're all from McNary High School. They're all sophomores. First, Brianna Cornelius. Good morning, Brianna. She's 16, and she loves soccer. And Carly Knopp, nearby, hopefully. There she is. She's 15. She loves volleyball, basketball, and wants to be an economic and academic tutor. Is that correct? Did I say that right? Okay. And then Brooke Brown, age 15. Soccer, swim team, and are her interests. They're all sports people. This is great. And she is going to do an internship with Salon 124. So look out, Hair World. There they are. Welcome all our honorary pages from McNary today. Thank you.
Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's my honor to present to you four honorary pages, again, from Beverly Cleary School in Northeast Portland. First of all, we have Zach Taylor. Zach, would you rise, please? Zach is 13, and his passions are band and sports. Welcome, Zach. Then we have Emily Friedenberg. Emily is 13. Her passions are soccer and band, and she wants to be an interior designer. Welcome, Emily. Then we have Luke Taylor. Luke is also 13. Luke is into algebra, band, music, and sports. And his career goal is music. Welcome, Luke. And then finally, Crystal Herring. Crystal, 13. Her activities are art club, symphony, jazz ensemble, honor roll, and she's a volunteer for the Humane Society. And her career goals are something in art or something in music. Welcome to you all.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have the honor of welcoming two honorary pages to the Capitol today. Maddie McNerthney, if you would stand, an eighth grader at Beverly Cleary Fernwood School in Portland. Thank you for being here, Maddie. And Nate Jacobstein-Ross, her classmate from Beverly Cleary Fernwood. Activities, interests include baseball, and career goals to be a constitutional lawyer. Welcome to the House. Thank you.
Also want to introduce one additional page. If she would stand, Emily Hunt, who is in the front row there. She is a student at Candy Lane Elementary School, aspires to be a photographer, enjoys swimming, math, and at least occasionally hanging out with her father. Welcome, Emily. And thanks to all of our pages. We really appreciate your service to the House of Representatives today. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up in the gallery here, we have two fourth grade classes from Green Acres Elementary School. That's in Lebanon on 10th Street, and they have great soccer fields. I've been there many times. And these are the fourth grade classes from Alan Cook and Janelle Wren, so please stand. They're kind of scattered there. And colleagues, please welcome them to their house. Thank you.
Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day here. Any further courtesies? We will now move to our minute in Oregon sesquicentennial history. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Kathy Tucker, who is the director of the Northwest History Network in Portland. Today we're going to learn about the Oregon Pony. Giddy up. The first steam locomotive in the Pacific Northwest, known as the Oregon Pony, was used in the early 1860s to portage steamboat passengers and goods past the Cascade Rapids, a rocky and turbulent stretch of the Columbia River now drowned by Bonneville Dam. Steamboats provided transportation on the Columbia between Portland and mining areas in Idaho and the Columbia Plateau. Portage was also necessary at other navigation obstructions, including Celilo Falls. San Francisco's Vulcan Iron Works built the little wood-burning engine, only 14 and a half feet long, which arrived in Oregon in 1862. It replaced the horses and mules that pulled small rail cars 4.5 miles over iron-reinforced wooden rails for the Oregon Portage Railway. The railway was bought by Oregon Steam Navigation Company. The company consolidated its Cascades rail portage monopoly on the Washington side of the Columbia River and moved the Oregon Pony to the Dalles, where it may have been used for portages around Celilo Falls. In 1866, Oregon Steam Navigation Company sold the engine and it returned to San Francisco for work filling and grading the streets of that city. After the Oregon Pony was damaged in a 1904 fire, the owner partially restored it and donated it to the Oregon Historical Society. It was displayed at the 1905 Lewis and Clark Exposition and afterward at the Albina Rail Yards. In the 1930s, the Oregon Pony was moved to Union Station. It was returned to Cascade Locks in 1970. The Port of Cascade Locks funded a 1981 restoration and built a permanent covered display. Giddy up.
Thank you. The clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Barker is present. Excuse Representative Widener. All other members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bill 771, 217, 571, 862, 871, House Bill 2433, adopted SGR 39, passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2275.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
H.R. 5, honoring former Governor Victor G. Atiyah for his achievements. S.J.R. 39, recognizing and honoring Pendleton Roundup Centennial Celebration.
Measures read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. Colleagues, if we could have some quiet on the floor, please. The clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 7, in memoriam, Mary Alice Ford, 1935 to 2008.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of HCR 7. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm glad that we get to start what looks to be a busy day on the floor with an opportunity to honor a faithful Oregon servant. I suspect that Representative Ford would be proud to be associated with what looks to be a productive day in the legislature. Mary Alice Ford and her family moved to Oregon, as I did, from Idaho, and eventually settled in eastern Washington County, where she quickly became a volunteer with the Republican Party and served as chair of the Washington County Republicans for 5 years. In 1979, she was appointed to the Oregon legislature and sworn in 3 days before the beginning of that session, which gave her 3 days seniority over the rest of her freshman class, and I understand that was something she was proud of for the duration of her service. And in fact, that service lasted an additional 7 terms for 16 years of service in the House. She served on lots of committees, as many of us do, and most notably among those, I think, is Human Resources. She chaired that committee in 1991 and 93 and developed the reputation as a strong advocate for elderly, disabled. She sponsored many pieces of legislation relating to long-term care, assisted care, foster care, issues involving folks with disabilities. And she was responsible for moving the motorcycle helmet bill to a statewide vote where it was approved, having become involved in that issue when her son Tom was nearly killed by a drunk driver while he was riding a moped. She was appointed in 1984 by President Reagan to the United States Architecture and Transportation Barriers Compliance Board, and she chaired that agency in 1985. She had a reputation that was international. Traveled to South Africa, Nicaragua, and England to share her expertise at the invitation of those governments and received awards, recognitions of all types, including the Delta Kappa Gamma Society, the Portland Area Women's Political Caucus, and the Oregon Commission for Women. She was also active in public affairs after she left the legislature as recently as 2005, was president of the Washington County Public Affairs Forum, a group that many of the Washington County delegation are frequent and active participants in as well, and also a member of the Beaverton Area Chamber of Commerce, active in her Episcopal Church as well. I was not fortunate enough to know Representative Ford very well, but I did have the chance to meet her on several occasions and come across her, and I was always struck by the twinkle in her eye and the continued devotion to public service and discussion of public issues throughout her life, and I'm proud to be one of her successors in the seat that I'm proud to now hold. She's served her constituents, the people of Oregon, throughout her life, and her accomplishments really accrued to the benefit of the whole state. So I appreciate the chance to honor her. Her family, some of her family is here with us today on the side aisle. Her son Tom, her daughter-in-law Sherilyn, granddaughter Erin, and one of her longtime staff members and friends Diana Ward. So colleagues, I hope you'll join me in honoring a faithful servant to the state of Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, sometimes we forget that the words that we say here in this chamber come back decades later and touch people that we have never met. And Mary Alice Ford is a person that I never met, but as I worked at the Department of Human Services and moved into my office here, I had a quote of hers that hung on my wall, and I still have never met her. But it was at a hearing in Human Services Committee in 1991, and her quote was, "I am so damn tired of having people come to me and say that if they give their kid up for adoption or place it with the state in a foster home or if they get a divorce, they'll get services for their child. This is the most idiotic policy a state ever had, a state that cared about individuals and families." Mary Alice Ford was one of the early advocates for family support services that helped families that were caring for kids who had mental health or developmental disabilities that needed support from our state. And I am grateful to her for the leadership that she demonstrated then, for the services that are available to families because of her advocacy. And I continue to be grateful for this quote, which I still keep close at hand in my desk. Thank you for bringing this memorial, and I hope you'll join me in honoring Representative Ford. Thank you.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, good morning. Welcome to family and friends. While I can't reflect on my own personal knowledge of Mary Alice Ford, I do want to take a moment to share with you a few of the reflections shared to me of her, both as a colleague and as a friend. There's some powerful statements. Mary Alice Ford was of highest character. She was and had a big heart. She was a thoughtful legislator who never voted blindly. She always stuck to her principles. She was honest and embodied a statesman or stateswoman-like attitude Oregonians expect and deserve from their representatives. As you can hear from those comments, the recap of her legacy of service, Mary Alice Ford was very committed and involved in nearly everything. These activities to her weren't just titles. She wasn't out to simply get her ticket punched. She did them because she believed in public service, she believed in her community, and in making her state a better place. She did do a lot of things, and importantly, she did them well. I'd like to thank the members of the family who are here today, staff, and those who couldn't be here for sharing Mary Alice Ford with this state. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on this important resolution.
Representative Kenner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the resolution.
To the resolution. Thank you. You know, it's interesting to go down memory lane, and one of the very first people I met when I first came to the legislature in 87 was Mary Alice. And I guess the thing that stuck with me was a combination of sincerity and forthrightness. She came over to visit me and read me the riot act about one of my new freshman activities. And she minced no words in explaining how incorrect and misguided and misinformed and inappropriate I was, but that she loved me. And that I better straighten up or she'd be seeing me on a regular basis. And that was a wonderful relationship, one of friendship, one of mentoring, and what a wonderful person, dedicated, sincere, always trying to do the right thing and having a huge impact.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Reed, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. We want to recognize and ask to stand and come forward not only the family members over here in the side gallery, but also I believe there are some family members up in the rear gallery. I want to thank all the family and friends and former staff of Representative Ford, HCR 7. And HCR 7, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2153 relating to civil penalties related to use of state land and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2299 relating to detention facilities. House Bill 2666 relating to parental mental health disorders and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2839 relating to domestic partnership and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2897 relating to placement of children in protective custody. House Bill 3022 relating to treatment of sexually transmitted diseases. House Bill 3255 relating to emergency response times and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3470 relating to veterans and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read for the second time or passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2664 relating to Oregon Criminal Justice Commission grants Oregon Criminal Justice Commission authority to apply for and receive gifts and grants.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2664A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. Representative Bentz votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2664A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2408, relating to commuter rail.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2408A, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2408 provides a mechanism to explore the possibility of expanding the West Side Express Line commuter rail that now goes from Beaverton to Wilsonville down to Salem. I think those of us that live in the metropolitan area and come down to Salem regularly find driving on 217 and I-5 quite a nuisance, and the vision that we could have a commuter rail that goes from Beaverton down to Salem and connects in the metropolitan area with the MAX lines is very exciting. This bill began with a proposal for a task force to explore the possibility of extending that line to Salem. But it turned out that ODOT is already working on a rail study that includes reviewing this. So what House Bill 2408 does is it provides a mechanism for the findings of that study relative to the West Side commuter rail in a way that includes local, state, and federal officials and takes advantage of the interim work of one of our House committees. It's a simple bill. It directs ODOT to share the results of that study with a specific group of people, state, local, federal officials and railroad officials, and it asks that group to respond to an interim to one of our regular interim committees looking at that process. It's a straightforward bill. It has no fiscal, and ODOT supports it, as does the chair of the interim committee, and I urge a yes vote on House Bill 2408.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlick, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes no. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Springer votes no. House Bill 2408A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2753, relating to pawn brokers.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2753A. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Folks, if you're wondering why the good friend from the River District is not carrying this, it's because his voice is not all it should be, but he's courageously at work to vote anyway, and I appreciate that work ethic. This bill passed out of Business and Labor Committee with a unanimous vote. It was brought to us by the pawnbroker industry. They requested it. Last time we did this for them, this legislature did this for them, relating to fees and such, was in 1997. House Bill 2753 authorizes changes in fees a pawnbroker may collect for a lost, stolen, or destroyed pawn ticket or memorandum form, storage firearms required to be registered under federal law. Provides that the pawnbroker and pledger may agree on a 60-day renewal period for pledge loans. Requires certain notices to be mailed to the pledger before the pawnbroker may deem a pledge to be fortified. Permits local government that regulates pawnbrokers to impose a maximum fee of $1 for each pledge loan made, except for renewing a pledge loan for the purpose of administering and enforcing local government systems of tracking pledge articles. Allows a pawnbroker to charge the pledger only the fee amount imposed by the city or county. Good bill, should pass or dry vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson votes no. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Huffman votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative David Edwards votes aye. House Bill 2753A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2796, relating to motions to set aside.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2796A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2796A comes to us today from the House Judiciary Committee. Currently in Oregon, an intoxicated driver convicted of criminally negligent homicide, or DUI, is the same criminal episode, in the same criminal episode, cannot set aside the DUI. They cannot set aside the DUI, but they can set aside the criminally negligent homicide. This bill will fix that. It's a good bill. In 2007, we passed an aggravated vehicular homicide bill, 2740, which raises the penalty for a person who commits the criminal homicide, including criminally negligent homicide while driving under the influence, and has been previously convicted of a criminal homicide. If we don't pass this bill, potentially those people could have things expunged from the record in the future. Families cannot escape or erase or expunge the death of their loved ones. I urge your aye vote today.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2796A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2903, relating to employment agreements.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2903A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, what we have before us today at 2903A is a jobs bill for the state of Oregon. A jobs bill. We heard testimony from an operator right here in Marion County, downtown Salem, the operator of the convention center. Prior to the 2007 session, employers who had handbooks that their employees signed, which had an agreement to go to arbitration to solve problems between employers and employees. Prior to 2007 session, an employer could agree to hire you today, have you sign that handbook, and we go off to work. The employer had an opening, the employee needed a job, and we were off to work. In 2007, that particular issue got caught up in another issue, which was non-compete agreements. House Bill 2903 does not touch non-compete agreements, employment agreements. It takes the two-week wait time, 265,000 unemployed people, an employer has a job ready for them. And if there is an arbitration agreement in their handbook, that employee has to wait 2 weeks to go to work. This bill would just take it down to 72 hours. So there's still a wait period of 3 days. 3 days more than prior to the 2007 legislation. Colleagues, this is a good bill. If there's a job opening today, that person can go to work within 72 hours. Gives them a chance to look at that still. It's fair to the employee, and it's going to help employers get people to go to work. I urge your aye support today.
Further discussion. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
Folks, this is about getting people to work right now. A lot of people are unemployed. They can't wait 2 weeks without a paycheck. I think 3 days is sufficient. It's a good bill. Should pass surgery vote.
Further discussion. Representative Gilliam.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, this is a good bill. It's a great compromise. This doesn't remove a hurdle. It just sort of goes from the high hurdles to the low hurdles, and it puts people to work. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Representative Holvey, a last-minute entry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues,
to the bill.
To the bill. I'll be voting against this bill. I do not believe this bill is necessary. I believe that it is important in many cases for employees to get 2 weeks' notice of an arbitration agreement before they get hired. And quite frankly, if they so chose, they could go to work sooner than that 2 weeks. They could just agree to not enforce or take action on this arbitration agreement and go to work sooner. I think it's important, employees are obligated to give 2 weeks' notice in many cases, and I believe the employer should also give 2 weeks' notice in this particular case. If, in fact, an employee decides that he's going to take a job and makes an effort and moves or to a new location and decides that he's going to do this and doesn't find out ahead of time that there was an arbitration agreement that which he may or she may think has a negative impact on them in the future, they will have expended some monies or perhaps quit a job or made a very expensive move to take this job only to find out later that they have an arbitration agreement that they're going to be subject to. I don't believe this bill's necessary. Somebody could go to work within that 2 weeks anyway. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Now, seeing no further discussion, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close?
I do now, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Colleagues, I want to say this again. This is a jobs bill. This is about getting people to work. It is about protecting employees, and it is about giving employers reasonable tools to be able to do that. 2 weeks' notices, which is referred to on this floor, is when I'm leaving a job. As an employee, I'm a standard give a 2 weeks' notice. That's what we're talking about. This is not about going. That is not about going to work. This is about going to work. This is about the 265,000 people downtown Salem in jobs that are $12, $14, $15 an hour that are ready to go to work, that are unemployed, and they cannot go to work earlier than 2 weeks. Otherwise, the arbitration agreement is void. Thank you. I urge your aye support.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Riley, how do you vote? Riley votes aye. House Bill 2903A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2911 relating to disposition of property subject to a self-service storage facility lien.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2911A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill closes a loophole in the current law that allows owners of self-storage units to assume more money from delinquent renters' property than is owed, essentially a windfall. This is unique in Oregon lien statutes. It does not apply in any other one. This bill will remove that windfall and will render Oregon lien law consistent of self-storage liens consistent with other liens, will also render it consistent with the laws regarding self-storage liens in neighboring states such as Washington. It's a good bill. I urge an aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Berger votes aye. House Bill 2911A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2963, relating to strikes by certain public attorneys.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2963A. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2963A comes to us at the request of AFSCME from the House Committee on Business and Labor, where it passed with near unanimous consent under strong leadership of our well-respected representative from Happy Valley. In its simplest form, House Bill 2963A prohibits deputy district attorneys from striking. With the passing of this bill, the deputy district attorneys would be placed in the same category as police officers, firefighters, and select other few groups that would make it unlawful to strike or recognize a picket line of labor organization while in the performance of their official duties. Given their narrow set of circumstances that our deputy DAs are currently allowed to strike, it seems in the best interest of all involved to allow them access to binding arbitration. In fact, it's highly impractical and potentially unethical for a deputy district attorney to strike due to the case volume they carry and the need for constant contact with victims and the inability to transfer cases to an outside attorney who could proceed in the best interest of the victims seeking justice. Simply put, again, the DAs prosecute cases from start to finish. They're involved in that case with those victims. This would have a detrimental impact if they were to go on strike. Binding interest arbitration provides a fair approach to resolving disputes between employers and employees while maintaining critical service levels within our communities. Deputy district attorneys serve a critical role in our criminal justice system. It would serve us all well to allow them to access to binding interest arbitration. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Bailey votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes aye. House Bill 2963A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Galizio, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Request permission to return to courtesies.
Representative Galizio and a guest request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Galizio.
Yes, so today's Take Your Child to Work Day, and now that I have one, I wanted to do this. So I just wanted to introduce my son Giovanni, who says hello, do good work, and if you would please extend courtesies to Giovanni Michael Cunyong Galizio. Thank you very much.
The lengths you'll go through to not feel left out on Take Your Child to Work Day. Amazing. Any further courtesies while we're here? Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2981, relating to employment of persons with criminal convictions and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2981. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a busy day. Colleagues, House Bill 2981 comes with unanimous support out of the House Judiciary Committee. This bill is about public safety. This bill is one in a series of six bills that the local Marion County Task Force for Reentry put together and has come before us. This bill would just simply allow us to go back and study some of the licenses that are set up by rule and by statute that people coming out of prison that have done their time and want to be return and become productive good citizens, we would review those and give them an opportunity to maybe see some of those licenses they are restricted from the past. Maybe times have changed and that they would be able to qualify for those licenses. Simple bill, urge your unanimous support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote? Kotek votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel? Off the floor. House Bill 2981, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3020, relating to unlawful trade practice.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3020A. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3020A comes to you from the House Committee on Consumer Protection, where it passed with unanimous consent under strong leadership of the good representative from the Emerald City. I'd like to thank my good friend, our representative from Roseburg, who joined me in the quest of bringing this important matter to light with strong support from our Attorney General, John Kroger, and his office. House Bill 3020A will add protections for disabled veterans and their spouses, as well as our deployed service members and their spouses, by incorporating into Oregon's consumer protection law some of the consumer protection provisions of the Service Members Civil Relief Act, which is a federal protection of our military members. Imagine being a disabled veteran receiving an offer in which the caller states they could get your disability benefit increased if only a fee were paid in advance. Or perhaps a disabled veteran in your district is contacted by a salesperson who takes specific measurements for custom canes, chairs, or even scooters and asks for that down payment to secure transaction of an item they never intended to deliver. Spouses of our deployed service members are often struggling financially due to the lack of differential pay when citizen soldiers experience a significantly decreased salary while serving the country in combat. These families are often targeted under the pretense of assisting with financial stability, and suddenly they find that they've been taken advantage of and end up far worse off than they were to begin with. Colleagues, House Bill 3020A makes knowingly taking advantage of disabled veterans, service members in active service, or their spouses an unconscionable tactic and unlawful trade practice, giving our Attorney General authority to take action against these violators. Along with our good representative from Roseburg, I strongly urge your aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. That's the way it's done. Everyone voting in 30 seconds. Nice work. House Bill 3020A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3094, relating to the exemption from disclosure of public records that identify persons involved in research on animals at Oregon Health and Science University.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3094A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3094A comes to you from your Judiciary Committee. It extends the sunset on the current law allowing OHSU to exempt certain information from the public records law. Over the past decade, research institutions across the country have faced increasingly violent threats from animal rights extremists opposed to any and all use of animals in research. These threats come despite the fact that many medical advancements rely on the use of animals, and federal regulations require animal-based studies before new treatments and medications are approved for human use. In recent years, animal rights extremists have made their campaigns very personal by targeting health scientists and their families in their homes. In the past few months alone, researchers on the West Coast have had their cars and homes firebombed. They have also received warnings of rat poison-laced letters sent to their homes. Their children have been threatened, and extremists have even forced their way into a home, injuring the family member of a researcher in the process. At least one Oregon institution has also witnessed a significant escalation in these types of attacks and threats. In the past couple of years, OHSU researchers have been heavily targeted. The attacks include costly home and car vandalism, threats to burn down the family home, threatening calls and emails, and loud, intimidating protests at their homes involving masked individuals. The names of OHSU researchers and their families have been posted on the web, along with their addresses and home numbers. Extremists are targeting law-abiding citizens doing health valuable research. To fuel their campaigns, some extremists rely on highly detailed records gathered through records requests. Through creative editing and omission, they use these details to paint health researchers as evil enemies who must be stopped at any cost. To date, OHSU has witnessed more than 50 incidents of harassment and illegal actions over the past few years. While any amount of harassment is too much, we believe this law has prevented additional attacks. House Bill 3094A seeks to continue current law. Doing so provides transparency for those concerned about animals in research, while at the same time disconnecting the names of individuals within highly detailed research records. Doing so will ensure that the public retains the ability to be informed of individual institutions' actions. They still maintain the right to campaign against organizations that use animals in research. However, current law helps prevent extremists from using records gained legally for illegal campaigns directed at the homes of individual researchers and their families. I strongly urge you to vote in favor of continuing current law. Failing to do so at this time, while extremist acts are on the rise, will place families at risk. Failing to do so will also impede important health studies in this state from which we all benefit. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this was not an easy call for me. I think that this bill has a lot of merit to it. The challenge is that these are public records. The research that is taking place at OHSU is being taken place with public dollars, and research that is subject to a fair amount of controversy. And while I think it's completely appropriate to redact the addresses of the people who are engaged in this research and that absolutely they should not be harassed at their home, I'm concerned that this approach, which to the proponents, on the side of the proponents, I do believe they've gone about as far as they can, but I think just a little bit too far along the side of not leaning on the side of the public interest here. And think about this. If this was research that was funded at the National Institutes of Health, it would be very important and relevant what the qualifications of the person that was implementing the procedures was. So, for example, if you're engaged in cancer research and a certain procedure is only supposed to be done by doctors, but it is being done by a certified nurse's assistant instead, that is material to the well-being of the patient and the quality of the research that is taking place. One of the problems with this bill is that it allows the complete redaction of the names of the people who are engaging in the procedures. Now, I completely understand why the proponents would like to do that, but there's really no other way to find out if the people who are doing these procedures are actually qualified to be doing them. I think the proponents did about as good of a job as they can, but I think on balance, this bill goes a little bit too far in the redaction of names, and that's why I'm voting no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I rise in support of this bill. It seems to me an important one. And we always have a question of who benefits and who's at risk. And in this bill, there is significant risk to the people that are involved in a variety of kinds of research around HMO. And it isn't a question of are they doing it correctly or not doing it correctly, but I spent a decade as a department chair at OHSU, and this was always on our mind. It's that how do we protect the people who are working with us, doing a good job and taking care of it, and they are at risk. What we're doing is reducing the risk to individuals, and what we lose is some hypothetical ability of the public to get access to data that, in fact, there are ways to get access to that data anyway. And I do join with the sponsors of this bill and urge you to vote for it.
Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill, yes, sir. Representative Greenlick has said some of what I had intended to say, but I'd like to rise in support of this bill. The people performing this work are not just anyone. They are carefully scrutinized in the funding process by NIH, by NSF, whoever else is doing this work. This is not a new topic from the time that I was in grad school. This was around and we had to deal with it, and there are animal care committees at every institution performing this work. All we're doing here is maintaining in place a law that has been here that protects the individuals doing this work.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd just like to briefly close by acknowledging the concerns of my friend from the soul of Portland and also concerns expressed by others in the committee process about this bill. There are conflicting values at stake here. This legislation pits our interest in public availability of records against the legitimate interests of OHSU researchers in their safety for themselves and their families. For most of us on the committee, the balance was struck in this bill in favor of continuing current law. I believe the sunset ensures that the exemption will be applied responsibly. It'll be back before us in 4 years, and I would respectfully urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingert, how do you vote? Wingert votes no. House Bill 3094A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3184, relating to funeral expense insurance policies.
The question arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3184A. Representative Thatcher.
Colleagues, House Bill 3184 very simply allows family members to buy funeral insurance for an adult loved one without having to jump through all the hoops of getting a limited power of attorney to do so. Under current law, the power of attorney is needed in order to buy a funeral plan for a relative. This legislation makes a small change in the law, but it can provide big relief for families with ailing elders. I have a constituent who brought this problem to my attention. We worked with the State Insurance Division and the American Council of Life Insurers to ensure that this bill was to their liking, and it's also endorsed by the Oregon Funeral Directors Association. This is not only a common sense bill which helps consumers, but it also brings Oregon law in line with the standards established by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. I urge your support of House Bill 3184. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes aye. House Bill 3184A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3256, related to unlawful employment practices involving the uniformed services.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3256. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3256 comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor. It passed with unanimous consent under strong leadership of our chair, good representative from Happy Valley. I'd like to extend my appreciation to, again, the good friend from representative from Roseburg. We appreciate his help as well, together with the offices of the Attorney General, John Kroger, and Labor Commissioner Brad Avakian. House Bill 3256 comes to you at a critical time for Oregon's military servicemen and women. With the deployment of nearly 3,000 of our citizen soldiers just around the corner, many of these men and women will be walking away from secure employment to serve our great nation. The Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act of 1994, referred to as USERRA, is the tool in which these men and women would ordinarily rely on to secure their reemployment right to their previous position. Oregon has two statutes similar to USERRA, however. Under current Oregon law, there's no enforcement mechanism, and the State Attorney General has no authority to enforce. House Bill 3256 amends ORS Chapter 659A, governing unlawful employment discrimination, making it a violation of the state law to discriminate against our veterans in the workplace or deprive them of rights as currently established by other state and federal statutes. The bill establishes a list of prohibited acts and also creates a new protected class of persons under the chapter. The good news is that the employer support for the Guard and Reserve program is maintaining its focus on educating our employers and offers incentives for supporting the Guard and Reserves, along with mediation to minimize the impact. Unfortunately, as pointed out by our fellow veteran and good representative from Medford, the private sector has a long-standing tradition of honoring its vets, while the majority of the problems still arise from our public employers. I can't argue that point, would only urge that we can do better. House Bill 3256 creates protection from discrimination and a path for justice and ultimate success for the men and women serving our great nation. I can't emphasize it enough that these are citizen soldiers, many leaving their secure employment. And with the help from a good colleague from Roseburg, this body, our Attorney General, and our Oregon Labor Commissioner, we can provide them security they need to maintain employment beyond their country's call. Thank you for your time and your attention, and I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3256.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, the road to tyranny is paved with good intentions. No one would accuse me of being a dove. I served honorably in Vietnam. I I've supported the military my whole life. But I would fight to the death to protect the rights of individual liberties for an employer who is a conscientious objector to be able to hire and work with him in his workplace those that he feels would be appropriate. And so if you have a Quaker who doesn't want to hire an employee because they go to war and kill people, I respect that. I don't agree with it, but I respect it. And for us to say we're going to create a new category of protected individuals, and there'll be anybody dealing with uniformed services, and to say that an employer will commit a crime and be subject to penalties if they refuse to hire someone because in their heart of hearts they don't agree with the fact that they go to war and kill people, what are we becoming? We will use the government, the power of compulsion, to do what we think is a good thing. But the consequences are that we take from people their individual rights to hire who they think is appropriate. Now, in some instances, I think that is appropriate. We have said that we're going to violate those individual rights in the area of gender, in the area of race and religion, and some other qualifications and classifications that we've expanded over time. But for us now to say it's going to also be expanded to include anybody who has served in the military or who might serve in the military or who is currently serving in the military, where does it end? Those that love justice, those that love freedom, should vote against this bill, not because we don't respect the military, but because of what this is really saying. And that is that we will use the power of government to force an individual against their own conscience to hire someone who's been involved in military service, including the taking of life, merely because we can. Now, as I say, I've served in the military, I'm a patriot, and I respect all who serve. But I'm also one who's committed to the Constitution and to the founders' rights of individual liberties, and that we should usurp those liberties very carefully. And this is, we're expanding a classification here, which I think will be violating the rights of individuals who are conscientious objectors in a way that is not upholding the principles of the Constitution and of the freedoms that we stand for. And so I'll be a no vote on this. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
With all due respect from my friend from Southern Oregon, and I just want to thank him for his service to his country as well. We do have classifications of folks that you cannot discriminate against. And the reason these folks have that in statute and law and why it's constitutionally backed up, and reason that the Quaker referred to can be a conscientious objector, and the reason we have freedom, and the reason we have government, and the reason we have this building right here, and the reason I can stand here and shoot my mouth off as long as I want, as long as I'm duly elected, is all due to those men and women who went out there and sacrificed virtually everything they had, some of them, and were willing to go out and potentially sacrifice everything they have for me, for my little girl, and for you. So that's a great bill. I think it's a long overdue. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleague, to the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is a good bill. This is a bill that kind of takes after and looks after the people that have sacrificed not only part of their life, but some of them parts of themselves. This bill is a good step forward. I, too, am a Vietnam veteran. I, too, believe that this is a great step forward, and I, too, fully support this bill, as do several of my colleagues in here. I'm not here to impede anyone, but I do think that we owe some people the ability to stand on this floor and speak out for or against this, and we need to look out for them.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, once again, in closing, I would just like to say to have a program federally that has no enforcement mechanism at the state is a false sense of security for our men and women in the armed forces. This bill is about treating them with dignity, with fairness, and I respect the conversation we've had today, but I believe this is a good bill, and again, I urge your aye vote in House Bill 3256. Thank you for your time.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 3256, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2401, relating to assault.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2401A. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2401 expands the crime of assault in the third degree to include assault with a dangerous substance on a public safety officer. It adopts the same list of bodily fluids as does House Bill 2468, I believe is number, unless 78. It's a safety issue for our public safety officers. It comes to the floor with a unanimous vote from the Judiciary Committee, and I urge your aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Wingard.
Speaker, I wasn't sure I heard. Did he say that he wanted to suspend the rules for the purposes of bringing a visual aid in?
No, Mr. Speaker, I didn't.
Oh, then I misheard him.
Okay. Any further real discussion? Representative Smith, do you wish to close? I recommend not.
Mr. Speaker, I think we've covered the matter.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Representative Springer votes aye. House Bill 2401A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2584, related to antitrust regulation.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2584A. Representative Garrett.
Thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's a privilege to present House Bill 2584A this morning. House Bill 2584 comes to you from your Judiciary Committee. It's an important bill that will, for the first time, provide an effective, direct remedy for Oregon businesses and consumers who have been victims of anti-competitive behavior. Consumers and businesses at the end of a chain of distribution often pay the price for a manufacturer's anti-competitive behavior, such as price fixing or territorial market allocations. This is because unlawful overcharges caused by anti-competitive behavior that violates antitrust law are routinely passed down the chain of distribution. However, unless the consumer or business purchases a product directly from the manufacturer, the consumer or business lacks standing to bring a suit for damages under federal antitrust law. This is the rule of a 1977 U.S. Supreme Court case called Illinois Brick. Illinois Brick has become a general bar to the recovery of damages by indirect purchasers, even when the indirect purchasers can prove that an illegal overcharge was passed on to them. The result of this rule has been to deny the true victims of anti-competitive behavior a remedy under federal antitrust law. Oregon law provides that federal courts' decisions are persuasive authority when interpreting Oregon antitrust law, and Oregon law is therefore subject to an interpretation and has been interpreted such that it bars damages actions brought by indirect purchasers. Furthermore, prior to 2001, Oregon's Attorney General lacked authority to recover damages on behalf of indirect purchaser consumers. The impact of that was that Oregonians were denied in every case a seat at the table when cases were brought and settled. In 2001, in recognition of the injustice created by Illinois Brick, the Oregon legislature passed a bill that partially repealed the rule of Illinois Brick. Oregon's partial repealer gives the Attorney General the right to bring an action for damages on behalf of consumers who are indirect purchasers. Importantly, though, under current law, only the Attorney General may bring an action, and that action can only be brought on behalf of consumers, not businesses. Under current law, then, Oregon consumers are at the mercy of the Attorney General's budgetary constraints and enforcement priorities, and Oregon businesses who are indirect purchasers are without any remedy at all. A story I recently heard from a Portland area attorney provides a perfect example of the injustice that occurs under our current system. A major Oregon clothing manufacturer was recently damaged by purchasing millions of dollars of services through agents of service providers at inflated prices that were allegedly fixed by a few out-of-state service providers. Because the services for which the prices were allegedly fixed were purchased indirectly through agents and not directly from the service provider, this Oregon company and other Oregon businesses do not now have standing in court to recover the ill-gotten gains obtained by these service provider conspirators for the indirect purchases. Moreover, the Attorney General cannot bring suit in this case because these are Oregon businesses, not end consumers. Colleagues, House Bill 2584 is what is commonly referred to as an Illinois Brick repealer bill. The U.S. Supreme Court has confirmed that Illinois Brick is the rule under federal antitrust law, but that states may provide a damages remedy to indirect purchasers under state law. Many states have, in fact, passed Illinois Brick repealer statutes or have, through court decisions, provided indirect purchasers with the right to bring suit. Specifically, citizens and businesses in 23 other states in this country have the right to bring suit on their own behalf for antitrust damages as an indirect purchaser. In 17 of those states, treble damages are available. House Bill 2584 would fully repeal Illinois Brick by giving all indirect purchasers in Oregon, including businesses, the ability to bring a suit for damages on their own behalf under Oregon law. Importantly, House Bill 2584 does not change the law on what is and is not a violation of the antitrust laws. This bill relates only to the legal standing of those who can bring an action under the Oregon Antitrust Act. Moreover, passage of House Bill 2584 will benefit both businesses and consumers. This bill will guarantee Oregon companies their day in court and a share of any settlement if they are indirect purchasers. It lifts the absolute prohibition against indirect purchaser business actions under federal law by authorizing such actions under this act. Under current law, certain parties in an indirect purchaser action are denied their day in court. Furthermore, Oregon's indirect purchaser remedies are wholly dependent upon the Attorney General's awareness of a case and willingness and resource capacity to adequately advance that case. The current situation denies one of the fundamental rights that every person and business should have, complete and fair access to the justice system to seek redress for damages suffered. House Bill 2584A is a good bill. It will end this injustice. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today to, again, earlier today, talked about jobs in the state of Oregon. Who creates those jobs? Businesses. During testimony of this bill, we have, and I've got it here in my folder, I got all kinds of testimony from attorneys. I didn't have one business come, and I asked specifically, where's the businesses that are so asking for this ability? to tie up our courts, to have more litigation, to make it harder to do business in the state of Oregon and hire people, the 265,000 people that are unemployed today in our state. I have in my hand a floor letter of an organization that represents businesses that wanted me to put this on the floor. They weren't even in the committee to testify. But I'll share some of my thoughts and some of their thoughts with you today. First of all, the adoption of this bill will have a substantial and immediate impact on the number of antitrust cases that will be brought in Oregon, and will send a clear signal to the investors and entrepreneurs of this state. The legal climate will become more hostile to business. Granting private plaintiffs rather than only the Attorney General the ability to sue as purchasers, both direct and indirect, multiples of numbers of potential suits and defendants would face over a single alleged incident. Multiple over the single alleged incident lawsuits that would take place on businesses in this state. The number of claims for treble damages, which you heard the carrier of the bill say, would be multiplied. Under current law, purchasers can recover all or part of an overcharge passed on to them by the direct purchaser. And the direct purchaser is entitled to recover full damages from the defendant. Testimony for the in the proponent's testimony of the bill, I'll just cite an example here of a $10,806,000 lawsuit that was settled in Washington. That's $10.8 million. $3.1 million was earmarked for the businesses, including the farmers, the retailers who paid higher prices. $10 million lawsuit, 30% of it went to those. Where'd the other $7 million go, colleagues? Allowing further damages to be recovered by the indirect purchaser leaves a defendant open to potential limitless liability. Enacting this bill would have a chilling effect on Oregon businesses at a time when the state would be better served by doing everything possible to encourage economic development and job growth in this state. Colleagues, are we here? Are we listening? Are we watching? Are we seeing the 265,000 unemployed people? The good businesses of this state will get those people back to work. We continue to pass things like this that will prevent those businesses from wanting to come here to do business in this state. I urge your no vote on this bill today.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as the one of the co-chairs of the Public Safety Subcommittee on Ways and Means, I could tell you that the resources of the Attorney General are very taxed when it comes to pursuing these cases. And I think it's just unrealistic to think that the Attorney General will be able to defend and represent the small businesses in this state who are the victims of price fixing. And that's really what this bill is about. It's about companies working in collusion to fix prices that end up hurting not only consumers, but the small businesses that that purchase their goods or services. All this bill does is allow some remedy to what is often those small businesses who are indirect purchasers. So under current law, if they are buying from a wholesaler, they would have no remedy if the price fixing took place by a bigger corporation who then sold to the wholesaler. So this bill is all about giving a remedy against price fixers. Now, I don't think that standing up for people who are working in collusion against antitrust laws is what business in this state is all about. And so I would urge you to vote aye and give those people the remedy they deserve. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Garrett, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues, for your attention this morning. I just want to briefly close and address some of the comments made by my good colleague from Salem, Omsville, and Turner. One thing I didn't mention in my opening is that in my real life, I'm a corporate attorney, and I do a fair amount of antitrust work, and I represent Oregon companies. And if I thought that this bill was going to significantly increase the risk of subjecting Oregon companies to multiple duplicative lawsuits and overlapping remedies, I would have a hard time supporting it. But I don't believe that's the case. We heard testimony from a former assistant attorney general who is now in private practice, who was in charge of the antitrust unit at DOJ in Oregon for several years. And he testified that he is not aware of any instance in the, I believe, 32 years since Illinois BRIC was decided, when a company has been subjected to duplicative lawsuits and damages awards in a case like this. And the reason for that is very simple. Most of these antitrust cases are class actions that transcend state borders. They are managed judicially in such a way that multiple actions are consolidated and managed by the court in such a way that damages are allocated in a rational and thorough, well-thought-out manner. The risk of duplicative lawsuits and remedies here is only theoretical. There is absolutely no factual basis that we heard in testimony to support that. I also want to address the point made by my friend that the remedy already exists for indirect purchasers. We heard testimony in committee that is directly to the contrary. They simply do not have any remedy. Oregon consumers have a remedy if the Attorney General chooses to bring an action. But as we've already noted, that is inherently limited by the Attorney General's attention and resources. If the Attorney General doesn't want to bring a case or can't bring a case, there is no remedy for consumers. And as I also noted, even if the AG does bring a case, that is for consumers only. Oregon businesses are not eligible to be included in that. So I view this as, from a business attorney's perspective, I think this bill is, at worst, neutral for Oregon business. And there's a very good chance that this is a pro-business bill because Oregon companies are as likely to benefit from this legislation as they are to be sued under it. Thank you, colleagues.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes no. House Bill 2584A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2687, relating to receipt of monies on behalf of a minor.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2687A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2687 comes to you today from the Judiciary Committee. Last session, the legislature passed a bill to simplify and make the process of settling and protecting funds received by a minor for injuries that they may have suffered in an accident more economical. Since that law was enacted, some unforeseen difficulties arose for banks, insurance companies, and those wishing to protect the minor's funds. Some banks have been unwilling to open accounts to accept those funds from settlement agreements or judgments on behalf of a minor without a formal conservatorship. Insurance companies need the ability to purchase annuities for the minors in appropriate circumstances. This bill allows such purchases and preservation of the funds for minors. Those wishing to provide maximum protection of the minor's funds wanted to ensure that no one, including the minor or parents, would have access to these funds without a court order. This bill provides for that protection. This bill has carefully crafted consensus that addresses the problem that appeared after enactment of the original legislation and supported by all the interested parties. Ask for your aye vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Representative Krieger? Representative Hanna, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request that the rules be suspended to allow the carrier of the bill to vote on the bill. I know this is an unusual request, but would ask that you do so.
And presumably not precedent-setting, correct?
I would certainly hope not, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for the purpose of allowing Representative Krieger to vote on House Bill 2687A. Is there objection? Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Krieger votes aye. House Bill 2687A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2883, relating to Protective Proceedings Task Force and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2883A. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2383 comes to us from the House Committee on Human Services, and it creates a public task force for the purpose of studying public guardian and conservator services in Oregon. It also permits that group to accept contributions from public or private sources to support the effort. Hence, no general funds are requested. The concept was advanced by the Governor's Commission on Senior Services after their conversations with senior advocates, protective workers, and law enforcement officials across the state that highlighted the need for a public guardian and conservator program. In the course of our lifetimes, we will each make many, many personal decisions relating to the various types of medical care or treatments that we might wish to accept or decline. Unfortunately, life circumstances can leave some individuals lacking the ability to give informed consent to crucial life decisions, and these citizens may also, unfortunately, lack a responsible party to make the decision on their behalf. Sadly, there exists in Oregon a large underserved population needing a basic level of service, a responsible party to act as a guardian and or conservator when the level of intervention is appropriate. The need for public guardian conservator services was addressed by the legislature in 1971 with the creation of the Public Guardian and Conservator Statute, ORS 125-700. This enabling statute was subsequently enacted by only two counties. Meanwhile, the need for this service has become progressively more acute. The Public Guardian and Conservator Task Force will be charged with examining the initial issue, why the current law and system does not meet the need, and evaluate options and models of public guardian programs around the nation. In a two-year study, this task force will develop and recommend to the legislature an effective quality program for Oregon. I urge your support of House Bill 2883.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close? She does not, but don't go anywhere. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Barker votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. House Bill 2883A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3041, relating to health literacy and declaring an emergency.
Okay.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3041A. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I rise to ask your support for House Bill 3041, which would create a pilot project for six Oregon Head Start programs to provide a health literacy program to train parents how to use a resource book to prevent the use of the emergency room or an unintended visit to the doctor. It is a very good bill. I brought this forward because I was a recipient, or I should say our program was a recipient of a grant from UCLA funded by Johnson & Johnson to do the very thing. And UCLA did the research and demonstrated, in fact, we did cut down on the use of the emergency room. We did cut down on doctor visits because the parents were using the resource book. So the pilot project is not funded. It is simply set up so that we can go out and seek other people's money to fund this program. And I ask for your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Van Orman, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Edwards, David Edwards, votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, is declared House Bill 3041A is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3111 relating to unlawful trade practice cases.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3111A. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And
colleagues, House Bill 3111 is a judiciary fix-it bill. It prohibits the award of attorney's fees and court costs to prevailing defendants in civil actions brought by a private party unless the action's frivolous, as found by the court, and it will also provide them for prevailing plaintiffs. It was passed unanimously by the judiciary. It's a good bill. Should pass. Thank you.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm going to follow the good representative from Southern Oregon League and try to be very brief. I just wanted to say that I came into this, I ran for office and came in here fully committed to working across party lines. And this bill, while it may not be the most memorable thing to happen this session for a lot of you, for me it is very memorable because I think it's the furtherance of that commitment. I just want to thank the good representative from Southern Oregon for that and point out again that this was voted out of committee unanimously, and a good bill should pass. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, those are of the opinion that bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Aye. Roblin votes aye. Hovey, Representative Hovey votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Representative Barker votes aye. Representative Stiegler, how do you vote? Representative Stiegler votes aye. And Representative Hunt? Representative Hunt, how do you vote? Representative Hunt votes aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3111A has passed. Clerk will read the next bill. Oh, wait. Stand at ease. The clerk, House will come back to order. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3263 related to statutes of limitations.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3263. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. House Bill 3263 extends the statute of limitations for certain sex crimes if a suspect is identified on the basis of DNA sample comparisons. I appreciate the partnership of Chief sponsoring this bill with the Chair from Judiciary, Representative Jeff Barker, and also colleague Representative Wayne Krieger. This bill would extend the statute of limitations indefinitely for certain crimes where a DNA sample was collected at a time at a crime scene and at a later time the offender is identified on the basis of that sample. These are the crimes that this bill applies to: first-degree rape, first-degree sodomy, first-degree unlawful sexual penetration, and first-degree sexual abuse. This bill truly seeks justice for the victim. Earlier this month, the members from the Judiciary Committee listened to testimony from three ladies who had been raped while they were teenagers. All three women were victims of a serial rapist. Two of them were 13 years old. The third was in her senior year of high school, only 17 years old. All three were attacked by Richard Troy Gilmore. And let me read a short portion of the testimony by one of the victims. Quote, Richard Gilmore, also known as the jogger rapist, robbed me of my adolescence, dignity, and sense of security, as well as my aspirations of becoming an Olympic gymnast. The crushing blows he inflicted on my lower back, which resulted in permanent physical damage, made certain of that. Today, almost 30 years later, I often struggle with being home alone at night. As you are aware, last session we extended the statute of limitations to 25 years for 7 sex crimes, 4 of which is what this bill is all about. Obviously, corroborating evidence must exist more forward in prosecution. It is worth remembering why statutes of limitations exist. As time passes, papers may be destroyed, witnesses may die, the conditions of a transaction may be forgotten, and memories fade, but the reliability of DNA evidence is not affected by the passage of time. Here's a breakdown of what is happening across the country at this time. There are 34 states that have changed their laws concerning this issue. 14 have no statute of limitation with DNA evidence. 16 do not require DNA evidence, and 4 have expanded the DNA evidence concept to include all sex crimes. The bottom line of House Bill 3263 is fairly narrow and conservative bill compared to the other states. And just a quote that I learned 34 years ago when I was a recruit, evidence is a means sanctioned by law of ascertaining in a judicial proceeding the truth respecting a question of fact. So I believe that applies to this. These three ladies that I mentioned earlier are more than fighters. They are strong and courageous. Tiffany Edens Leonard, Danielle Tudor, and Colleen Kelly, thank you for taking a stand to protect others in the future and ensuring that justice is met. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Olson, would you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Just quickly here. First, the fiscal is minimal on this. This was unanimously supported from the Committee on Judiciary. And I urge you strongly to consider supporting this bill. There's no question that the crime does not expire for the victim after 25 years or ever in their life. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. Representative Bailey, how do you vote? Bailey votes aye. Having House Bill 3263, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final readings, memorials, and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading, Senate bills.
Senate Bill 217 relating to historic preservation revolving loan fund and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 571 relating to fish. Senate Bill 771 relating to landlord-tenant law. Senate Bill 862 relating to reimbursement of health care costs and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 871 relating to the installment of security measures for property money and declared an emergency.
Bills read the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading, Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Thatcher be allowed to change her vote on House Bill 3256. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules so that Representative Thatcher can vote on House Bill, can change her vote on House Bill 3256. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher votes no. Further announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, we will not caucus today. However, we will caucus tomorrow at 11:30.
Further announcements. Seeing none. Remonstrances. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I am so pleased that we just passed House Bill 3263, which is an important measure to correct injustices against individuals who are victims of rape. I hope that the passage of this bill also bodes well for the passage of House Bill 2343, which this body sent to the Committee on Ways and Means from this floor. You'll remember that this was a bill that still held that if a woman was or a person was raped because they were incapacitated and they had voluntarily consumed alcohol, that would still be considered rape. That bill had a smaller fiscal than the bill that we just passed off this floor, so I hope that that means that House Bill 2343 will soon make its way back to the floor so that we can protect those women as well. It's a very important bill. Both of these are very important, and I thank you for your consideration.
Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10:15 a.m. Monday, April 27, 2009.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Monday, April 27, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Monday, April 27, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.